Hey everybody, and welcome to the UFC 246 Conor versus Cowboy dissection. And it's pretty crazy, but here in 2 days, we're probably going to see one of the best selling pay-per-view events for the UFC of 2020. You got two of the biggest superstars in Donald Cerrone and Conor McGregor clashing. Decent undercard underneath. Maybe not the most stacked card in the world, but when you got those two guys up top, man, it's going to compensate for a lot. The prelims have some really interesting fights on them, and it's been a while since they've had a UFC event, so I think people are kind of hungry. They're itching for it, right? So to have Conor be the UFC's first event of the year, going to be a big deal for people. I think it's going to do well in terms of numbers, right? Obviously, anytime Conor fights, then you throw Cowboy in there, numbers are going to be through the roof, I'm sure. Hopefully these guys, especially Cowboy, man. I mean, Cowboy is a guy, literally, he lives by that mantra of anytime, anywhere, right? And he lives it, and finally getting that payday that he deserves. Been a while since we had a UFC event, you know, and I don't know if you guys tuned into the ONE Championship fight, but they put on like a mixed, they'll have Muay Thai bouts and they'll have MMA bouts, right? And they put on a really good card. Tan Lee picked up a knockout win over there. I don't know if you guys are familiar with him. If you'd recognize him probably from like the Ultimate Fighter and the Dana White Contender Series and stuff like that, and for whatever reason, a UFC contract never materialized. And fighting over at ONE now, like I said, picked up a big win over Ryogo Takahashi. Stamp Fairtex, if you guys are not following her, I would recommend going and watching her fights. Her Muay Thai is incredible. And her ground game's pretty terrifying as well. She picked up a big win in the first round. And I think she's going to be on her way to challenging for a title soon over there, which is pretty crazy because she's only 4-0 right now. But her skills are very legit. She has a crazy, crazy Muay Thai or kickboxing record. It's like 63-7 or some shit like that. Very solid on the feet, and also just an expert at capitalizing on opportunity. She's just reacting to things so much faster than her opponent some of the times, and she's extremely impressive, and I'm excited to watch her MMA career develop. You also had I don't know how big the upset was, right? But I didn't see like betting lines on this, but Ma Jia Wen lost in the first round to Shinny Chag de Zolsteg. I know I'm butchering that name. I'm going to call him Shinny. But that was interesting to me because Ma Jia Wen is a Chinese national silver medalist in freestyle wrestling. So, and he's got very solid boxing fundamentals. And, man, to me, it was the most interesting fight on the card going into it just because of the way the styles match up. Because Shinny's very long, right, kind of showboaty, and fights over in 55 seconds of the first round. So, I mean, and their Muay Thai fights were spectacular. I'm not gonna do it a disservice by trying to break them down or recap them or anything, but just go – if you guys didn't catch ONE Championship 106, go check it out. And I can't remember the guy's name who headlined I'd have to go to the Instagram page or some shit. I'm not real familiar with ONE Championship Muay Thai fighters, just to be completely fair, but the guy who headlined the ONE Championship 106 card put on an absolute fucking clinic. I mean, a masterpiece, masterful work. And for those of you who are interested in striking, I would recommend checking him out. He's a great study. But anyway, I know there's some news that's been breaking and shit, but I just want to hop into this card and start breaking this stuff down. So UFC 246, all right, first off on the prelims, you're going to have Drew Dober fighting Nasrat Hakprost. I'm going to butcher a lot of names, right? Askar Askarov is fighting Tim Elliott. Andre Feely is fighting Sadiq Youssef. That's a really fucking good fight. And Macy Barber is fighting Roxanne Modafferi. And that's an interesting one as well because Macy Barber, undefeated. Roxanne Modafferi has done a lot to pick her striking up, known primarily as a ground fighter. And you kind of saw when Macy Barber fought J.J. Aldrich, I think it was, kind of get some holes exposed in her game, right? Now, I'm not saying that Roxanne is quite the striker that J.J. is, but it's going to be interesting to see how that one plays out because Roxanne Modafferi is a legit veteran, has a lot of fights to her name, right? But let's move on to breaking down this main card. And first off, you've got Diego Fajeda fighting Anthony Pettis in a lightweight bout. And, man, every time I break down an Anthony Pettis fight, it always feels like the same goddamn thing to me. It's like, is he going to be – Pettis is one of those guys who, when he is on, he's one of the best in the world, man. When Pettis is fighting at his absolute best and he gets into a rhythm, one of the hardest guys in the UFC to stop. There are moments when he's fighting and I'm like, God damn, how can you beat him? But then there are moments where you can pressure him and get in his face and kind of turn the fight gritty. And he kind of turns into a different person, man, kind of withers under that pressure, right? So here's the thing. Is Diego Fajeda going to be able to crowd that space and keep that jab in Pettis' face and never let him develop that rhythm in that range? To me, that's the whole key to this fight. Now, Diego Fajeda is one of those guys who has improved massively in the striking department in his last few fights. Now, he picked up a second-round TKO over Kyle Nelson like two or three fights ago. Three fights ago. He's on a five-fight win streak right now. But if you go back and watch that fight against Kyle Nelson, just his footwork and his positioning after he throws combinations, and you watch him in his next fight, right, against I have to look it up. I'm going to forget names, guys. I'm sorry. Against Rustam Khabibov, much better. Much better footwork. And then you watch him against Merbek Taisimov, who I had him losing this fight when I broke it down. He almost looks like a completely different person, man. He's so much more in control. He's fighting behind the jab. He's pumping the jab out there like a couple times and following up with right hands. And Merbek Taisimov is a very explosive striker. Has a lot of crazy, like, spinning attacks. A lot of versatility. And you could see that just by applying pressure, he was able to shut that down. And here's the scary thing about a guy like Diego Fajeda. His jiu-jitsu is so fucking nasty that when he is getting in a rhythm on the feet, he doesn't have to worry about you taking him down because he's not afraid to go to the ground. So he can implement his offense. I don't want to say it is kind of. He can implement his offense a little more recklessly and take some chances on some bigger shots and winging some bigger, like, haymakers at you just because, fuck it, what are you going to do, take me down? I'd probably have an advantage on the ground anyway, right? So, like I said, when I break down an Anthony Pettis fight, it always seems to boil down to this. Is Anthony Pettis going to be able to maintain his range and get into a rhythm against Diego Fajeda? If so, if this fight takes place in space and you're seeing Pettis, like, unleash his full arsenal, throw volume, a lot of variety in his tacks, and keep Diego guessing, I still think that regardless of how much Diego has improved on the feet, Pettis has an advantage in that department. But if Diego starts pushing forward and never allows that rhythm to happen and is constantly keeping the jab in Pettis' face, it's going to take something like clipping Diego. And here's the thing about Diego Fajeda. When you clip him, he just kind of – it doesn't seem to bother him a whole lot. He just gets up and keeps on pushing through it. You've seen him get rocked in a few fights, right? And he's just very tough. So if you see Pettis start getting behind early, it's going to take something like that to turn the tide. And – man, I just don't know if it'll matter against Diego unless it's something that knocks him right out like it did Stephen Thompson. You know, Pettis is, like I said, man, he's one of those guys who he has these flashes of brilliance. And, like, sometimes you'll watch him in a fight and go, oh, my God, what a brilliant display of martial arts. And then sometimes you'll be like, man, he just doesn't look like the same person in every fight, right? And I always point to, like, the Tony Ferguson fight. And don't get me wrong. I don't want to be the person who is criticizing fighters of quitting or being soft or whatever the fuck you want to call it, right? When an injury happens, because if I went to the octagon and I saw Tony Ferguson walking out, I would probably, I don't know, break down, have a fucking panic attack or something, right? I'm not saying that in the same situation, I would have done anything different, and I'm not comparing myself to them, but here's what I want you to think about. Do you think if Tony Ferguson breaks his hand in that fight that he even mentions it? You know what I mean? I don't, like, when Pettis brings it up, it's like, it's almost like a way out. And Tony was battering him and beating him up. And it's like, Pettis says he loves these dogfights, man. But do you? Do you? Because to me, the person that loves the dogfight is Tony Ferguson, Nate Diaz. When you're busting them up and they're digging down deep and they're really going all right. Like, I just think that, like, Pettis is one of those guys, and like I said, I don't mean this in a disrespectful way, and I don't want to compare myself to Anthony Pettis in any way. Like, he's doing way more in his day-to-day life than I'm probably doing in a fucking year, right? But there are certain guys, when you get to this level, it takes a certain mentality, and the greatest in the world seem to have that unbreakable and, like, indomitable spirit. And sometimes I feel like Anthony Pettis lacks that unless he's implementing his game plan. So, The question becomes, can Pettis control the pace of the fight, or is he going to let Diego Fajeda crowd a space? I'm going to be honest, man. Diego Fajeda, 16-2, riding a 5-fight win streak. I like him a lot in this fight. I think he's much improved. And I, like I said, I think that if you get into like a pure striking battle, Pettis probably has the upper hand. But sometimes that doesn't matter in a fight, man. Sometimes you can just turn this shit into a dogfight. And it's like been a proven kryptonite for Anthony Pettis throughout his career. And people know it now. So maybe this is one of those fights where Anthony Pettis has to answer that question. Maybe not only for, you know, maybe just for himself to kind of get himself back in that headspace of like, all right, like I can dig down deep and get through this shit. You know what I mean? I just think he struggles. I think he struggles when things get tough sometimes, but still an animal, man. Still one of the best. He's got one of the best highlight reels in UFC history and MMA history. And it's a good fight. And also one of the things to keep in mind is like Diego Fajeda is, as the fight wears on, if Pettis is landing and he might resort to going to the ground, and Anthony Pettis has a very, I've said this for a long time, man. Anthony Pettis has a very underrated ground game, especially off his back. His jiu-jitsu is nasty and underappreciated sometimes. So don't be surprised if we see some interesting grappling transitions. I think I give the edge to Diego on the ground still, but this is going to be a good fight. One of the most interesting fights on the card, in my opinion. Like, because like I said, you just never know what Anthony Pettis is going to show up, man. And I'm hoping that we see, like, prime Anthony Pettis show up, right? Like, he's on top of his game and he's ready to kick some fucking ass, man. But not that I'm rooting for him, but you want to see when two fighters collide, man, you want to see the best of both of them. You don't want to see a guy have an off night or something, right? But I'm taking Fajeda in this fight, but it could go either way. If Pettis comes out and he's hot and he's establishing range and he's kicking and, you know what I mean, utilizing all of his skills, he could pick this win up. It's not like this is an unwinnable fight for Anthony Pettis, but I'm leaning towards Fajeda a little bit. All right, next is a pretty good fight too. You got Claudia Gadea fighting Alexa Grasso. And Claudia Gadea is coming off a win over Random Marcos. And I'm not going to lie, man. That was one of the most boring fights I've ever watched. Just not a lot happening. Nobody throwing any real combinations and shit. And then they get frustrated with each other in the third round. And they're like, come on. It's like, okay, well, we just sat here for 2.5 rounds waiting for this. And then nothing really even materialized after they did that, right? Like after they get frustrated with each other and kind of egg each other on. Before that, she lost in a big upset to Nina Ansarov. But to me, when I watched that fight, that was just Nina Ansarov went from like, it felt like Nina Ansarov was kind of like going like steadily increasing throughout her career, right? And then she just went boom and fucking took off, man. It's like she turned a corner and realized like some of her potential and just started throwing combos together and looked really good on the feet. Kind of exposed some things in Claudia Gadea's game, right? And then before that, a split decision went over Carla Esparza in a close fight. All right, so these two have a common opponent in Carla Esparza. And when you watch Alexa Grasso fight Carla Esparza, Esparza was able to land some takedowns. And this is, I think that when these two are standing, I think Alexa Grasso is going to have the advantage on the feet between her and Claudia, right? I think that Claudia's striking base is a little more fundamental. That's not always a bad thing, but I just think that Grasso is going to be able to implement her game plan and attack with a little more variety. Going to have to worry about like keeping her head off the center line because Gadea has some fucking power and stuff, right? Like just staying sound. But I think that the advantage is going to go to her. However, on the ground, you did see Carla Esparza take her down at different parts in the fight, right? And I think that you saw this a little bit when Gadea and Carla Esparza fought. I think Claudia Gadea's top control is a little bit better than Carla's. Whereas Carla was kind of like, she would get the takedown and working really hard to establish dominant position and hold Alexa down, but Alexa would always get back up to her feet. I think if Claudia is able to take Alexa down, she's going to be able to hold her there a little bit more securely and get some ground and pound off and be a little bit more vicious with it, you know? I just think her top game is a little bit better than Carla's. The question is going to be, is she going to be able to get past the striking and able to get in on some good entries, right? I think the thing about this is that Claudia is going to have to be able to threaten on the feet or else the takedowns aren't going to be there. They're never going to open themselves up because, I mean, if someone's dotting you up and establishing range, Here's one of the things to look for, though. Sometimes when people are doing that, they can get a little bit too excited and overextend on something, looking for the finish a little bit too hard, going, getting a little too aggressive, and that'll open up the opportunity for the takedowns. So I think Alexa Grasso, if she wants to win this fight, is going to have to fight a patient fight. Intelligent, aggressive, but I like to use the term like controlled aggression, right? You can be aggressive, but when you start overextending and getting out of place on things and your footwork's fucked up and you're making small little mistakes at a high level like this, especially against someone like Gedeia, who's going to look to engage in the clinch and get this fight to the ground somehow, and who's very powerful, right? Probably a little bit stronger in the clinch than Alexa's going to be. I think Alexa has to fight a very smart fight, because I think if she starts tagging Gedeia and gets too excited with it, it could be to her detriment, because she could get taken down. One thing to note is whoever I think is implementing their game plan like midway through round two is probably going to end up winning round three, just because I think Gedeia has a tendency to kind of get tired and fade a little bit in fights. And if Alexa Grasso is controlling things in the second round and dotting her up, and Gedeia is not able to finish the second round on top, she's going to be tired going into third, and you might see Alexa Grasso pick. I think if Alexa Grasso picks up a finish, it'll probably be in the third round. And for Gedeia, it could be, it's hard to say, right? Because she might be able to submit her from the top. She might be way more advanced on the ground than she is. I don't know. But I would guess that if the finish comes for Alexa Grasso, it'll come later in like the third round. But I would say that whoever controlled the second round is probably going to win the third, right? So the first round is kind of a toss-up. Like, you might see Gedeia come out and take her down. I think this is going to be a fight where mid-fight adjustments are going to be very important for both fighters. Like, if Alexa Grasso is teeing off on Claudia throughout the first round, Claudia is going to have to find a way to change momentum in the second, adjust her game plan, get the fight to the ground somehow, because if not, she's going to start to fade. And same thing for Alexa. I mean, if she's not able to stuff the takedown, it's going to be a long fucking night for her, right? I mean, this sounds like the obvious striker versus wrestler matchup, and it kind of is in a way, but I think this is going to be about, like, I don't think the first round, not that the first round isn't important, it obviously is, right? Watch, this fight will fucking end in the first round. But I really think that the important round in this fight is going to be round number two. I think whoever wins round number two is going to win round number three. So mid-fight adjustments for me are the key to this one, and I'm taking Claudia Gedeia. Generally, I tend to lean towards the grappler, and I think Claudia is going to have a significant disadvantage on the feet, but I like her odds of getting this to the ground at some point and wearing on Alexa. And sometimes when that happens as well, you'll see, like, if Claudia can get a takedown and kind of secure it, it'll open up her striking a little bit more, which will then open up her takedowns. It all kind of works together, right? This is a winnable fight for Alexa Grasso, though, and I'm really interested to see how this one plays out. But if I had to bet money on it, I'm taking Claudia Gedeia. All right, let's move on to the next fight, which is going to be between Maurice Green and Alexei Olenek. And again, man, I mean, like, these might not be the biggest names in the world, and this might not be the most stacked card. Pettis and Fahey is a really good fight, right? I mean, these are all recognizable names, but this is another interesting fight where you've got a really long, I think Maurice Green's like 6'7 or some shit. I might be misspeaking. Someone check me on that. But very long. And also, if you look back at his past few fights, right? Like, you look at his fight against Junior Albini, and then his fight against, who did he fight right before Albini? Jeff Hughes. And Batista in his UFC. He picked up a triangle. He's one of only two UFC heavyweights to ever win by triangle, by the way. Other one is Stefan Struve, who has two of them. But He's in so much better shape. Like, when you saw his fight against Sergey Pavlovich, granted he lost, but he was in so much better shape and his footwork looked a little more crisp. But little things, man, like head movement. He's got to get a little bit more fluid with moving his head. And when you're fighting a guy like Alexei Olenek, his striking might not be the most, like, devastating or the most fundamentally sound, but he'll throw some wild fucking shots, man. And when you're in the heavyweight division, if you're not moving your head, those wild shots, if they connect, can put you the fuck out. Like, you saw, I don't think he ever really had Overeem in deep trouble or anything like that, but he definitely had Overeem backed up against the cage and covering up and throwing just bombs. And like I said, they weren't the most technically proficient, but they'll hurt if you're not careful. So he's going to have to work really hard at establishing his range. And sometimes I think it's a little bit harder to, like, when you're a long fighter, it can be kind of harder to establish your range as a heavyweight just because, like, I mean, this sounds like a tiny, like, minute detail to pick at, but sometimes that's what it is when you're talking about this level of fighting, right? Like, when you're throwing punches out there as a heavyweight, you have so much further to retract. And if someone's just throwing bombs at you, like, even if you're throwing, sometimes you get caught in the middle of an exchange. You've just got – your arms have to – and especially when you're long like Maurice Greene, your arms have – they have to retract further. And I'm a big fan of teeps and stuff like that when you're a heavyweight. I'm a big fan of teeps at any level. They're a little bit longer than the jab. They sting the body. They help to establish range. But if Maurice Greene can kind of get some front kicks off, establish the range that way, and then I think that he has to fight – he has to – you have to hide the punches with kicks and hide the kicks with punches, right? He's got to be able to mix things up against a veteran like Alexei Oleinik. Oleinik's game plan is going to be what it's been throughout his entire fucking career. Get this fight to the clinch, take it to the ground. The guy can mount you if he wants with all the Ezekiel chokes he has, and he's going to look to try to submit Maurice Greene. This is a tough fight to pick. Because I can, any time that you're picking heavyweight fights, right, it's difficult because anything can fucking happen. In terms of, like, pure striking, I like Maurice Greene, but the threat of the takedown and just, like, the fear of going to the ground can sometimes, like, it'll play head games with fighters sometimes. Sometimes you'll see them be overly aggressive because they want to get the guy out of there with their, like, on the feet while they can, and sometimes they're timid because they're so worried about the takedown. So for in this fight, I think it's going to be very important for Maurice Greene to kind of find that balance. Like, okay, I don't want to be overly aggressive, but I don't want to be too patient to where I'm letting him rush me and put me up against the cage and get me into positions I don't want to be in. So I think the key to this fight for Maurice Greene is going to be staying calm. You're fighting a veteran who's been there before. He's probably not going to have quite the nerves you do. Remain focused. And just work on establishing your range because you should have a significant advantage on the feet and you should be able to hit this guy from places that he's not able to hit you, right? And the striking, like I said, is not the most technically sound, so there's going to be some openings in the game of Alexei Oleinik. But that being said, I mean, Oleinik finds ways. He's a vet. He's got a lot of fights. He's got like 60 or some fights on his name. He finds ways to cover that distance and get you into positions where he wants to be. I'm gonna go with Maurice Greene just because I think he's a guy with a lot of room to improve, and I think that you're going to see him look better in this fight than he did the last fight. Just like I know he lost, but his footwork and his physique and everything just seems to be improving. So I'm going to bank on the fact that he's improved again. And if he can control the range and keep this fight where he wants it, keep it in his wheelhouse, I think he has a good chance to win and pick up a knockout. I think his striking's just more fundamentally sound, and he's got a little bit more pop in his punches and stuff as well. But that being said, the key for Oleinik is going to be closing the distance, engaging in the clinch, and finding a way to get this fight to the ground any way he can. Like I said, you got to be careful, though, because Maurice Greene has proven that he's a threat on the ground. He has that triangle win, man. That's not easy to pull off in the head. But those long limbs help with triangles, right? Regardless, I'm taking Maurice Greene in this fight. I think he'll get the knockout before the fight's over. All right, moving on to the co-main event. You've got Holly Holm and Raquel Pennington fighting in a rematch. I believe Raquel Pennington was the first woman that Holly Holm fought when she entered the UFC. And since then, their careers have kind of... Holly obviously went on and beat Ronda Rousey, right? But since she beat Ronda, she's like 2-5. Losses... I mean, don't get me wrong. Her losses are legit losses. Like, Durandamy, Chris Cyborg, Amanda Nunes, Valentina Shevchenko. I can't remember the other one off the top of my head. And she picked up like a win over Betch Koheya, right? But I think Holly has probably one of the more diverse striking skill sets in the women's bantamweight division in the UFC. But sometimes I think she gets afraid to pull the trigger. And she kind of gets... I kind of think Holly's detriment is that she's a very cerebral fighter. And as a result, she's always like looking for openings, and she's waiting for the perfect opportunity. And sometimes fighting is more about creating that opportunity. And I don't think she does that enough. Sometimes she'll get caught up in throwing the same combinations throughout the fight and just getting a little bit predictable. I think Holly Holm is one of those fighters who, like, obviously when she fought Ronda, you got to see a full, I think that was a major mismatch on the feet, but you got to see more of like what she's capable of when she's confident and when she's really getting into a rhythm. But for me, out of Holly Holm, I like to see more volume. There's this weird thing where, like, I bet if you watch Holly Holm train, like if you went into like a training session, could be a fly on the wall at Jackson Wink when she's going through everything, I bet she looks like a goddamn world beater. I would bet money on it. You know that her skills are all there. She keeps herself in incredible shape. She's very long for the weight class, but she's one of those girls who just goes in there, and I think she thinks too much when she fights. And it's weird because, like, fighting is definitely a thinking man's game, right? But it can also hurt you if you're over. Sometimes you just got to react, man. It's a lot of, like, when you watch Israel Adesanya go out and fight, like, you can tell that he's sizing guys up, but he's also just flowing and letting things come to him, right? Like, letting it come in and pour back out. Like, he's just reacting. And I think you see Holly think too much. And oddly enough, throughout Raquel Pennington's career, I think you've seen her do the same thing. I don't think she's ever really had confidence in her striking. And I bet kind of the same scenario. I bet if you go watch her train in Colorado here, I bet she looks incredible. But like some people, when they get in the octagon, for whatever reason, it's got to be like the pressure and the lights and just the everything and the fact that you were in a fucking fight. Like, you're not in the gym, you're fighting. And to me, the winner of this fight is going to it'll be whoever's letting it fly. And my hope is, honestly, that both girls do that and that we get a really entertaining fight. Because if you watch Raquel Pennington fight Irene Aldana in her last fight, she was letting her hands go, man. She looked brilliant. I thought she looked way better. I was like, this is a Raquel Pennington we've never seen before, right? So based on that fact, I'm taking Raquel Pennington going into this fight. I like the fact that she went up against a long-rangey fighter who has a lot of movement and a lot of crafty attacks and stuff. I like that she was able to go in against Irene Aldana and pick up a win and really display what she's capable of. Now, that's not saying that Holly Holm can't win, but this is what I think. I think that both fighters are extremely skilled. Both fighters are very tough. And both fighters throughout their career have just had a problem with letting it fly. Let the fucking hands go. Be confident in your training. So if either of these two relapse into that kind of, what do you want to call it? Right. I don't know. It's been a crutch for them throughout. Not a crutch. I can't think of a fucking word, but it's been a problem through them throughout their careers when they think too much. Whoever is not doing the thinking, whoever is doing the attacking and just flowing and fighting is going to win this fight. Now, if both of these girls decide to do that, now maybe one of them will do it and it'll drag it out of the other one. You might get a really fucking entertaining fight here because Raquel Pennington is hard to put away. And Holly Holm, like I said, I think her striking is very diverse. You just never see it on display in the fights all the time. So whoever comes out and whoever isn't hesitant and whoever isn't thinking too much, I think picks up the win in this fight. I'm going with Raquel Pennington, though, just based on her last fight and based on the fact that she came out and put volume and offense out, man. She looked great. All right, moving on to the main event, a welterweight bout between Conor McGregor and Donald Cerrone. And what, as a fan, right, put titles and everything else aside, what more can you fucking ask for? Two of the biggest stars in the UFC going at it this weekend. And two guys that like to primarily stand on the feet. Now, one thing that I do like a lot about this fight and about like the media hype surrounding it is that Conor is such a gifted striker that people are finally shining some light on Cowboys wrestling and ground game. It's finally getting some fucking respect. Like, you're hearing people ask him in interviews, are you planning on taking him down? You know? And it's like, Cowboy's been able to do this shit for a long time. He's always had good wrestling, good jiu-jitsu, and now people are finally starting to be like, oh, that could be an advantage for him going into this fight, right? So it's good to see him get that respect because he's just like so many of his fights are highlight reel knockouts or just like wars where he's standing up. Like, you know what I mean? Because he's got that warrior mentality. Fuck, man. I'm really, really excited to see how this fight plays out. One of the things that I do want to talk about is when people talk about Conor McGregor, and I've seen it in headlines in the media and stuff, right? They talk about how Conor is just a left hand. He just has that power left hand. I've got to say that that is not true. Conor's boxing is incredibly, he's incredibly precise. And I've said this before, man, in terms of pure striking, I think Conor's one of the most effective strikers of all time. Up there with Anderson Silva. His ability to put people away and create and find openings is incredible. And he's not only is he not just doing it with his left hand, he's doing it with his right. He paws out there, you know what I mean? He jabs a lot, but also his kicks. His kicks might not be knocking anybody out, but he uses them so well to establish range, and he just poses. He lets you know that these are a real fucking threat. And one of the things that I never hear anybody talk about, and I think it deserves more attention, are Conor's front kicks to the body. And one of the things that makes me a little bit nervous for Cowboy heading into this fight is that Cowboy's been susceptible to body shots throughout his career. Conor has an incredible teep. Like, he just throws it out there, man. It lands and it stabs people. I mean, just take your fingers like this, right, and hit yourself right here in the gut just a few times. That shit fucking hurts. And Conor will dig. You saw him do it against Chad Mendez. And it doesn't seem significant when it's happening. And the power in Conor's hands kind of draw away from those little kicks that he's throwing out there. But those are digging into the body over and over and over and over again. And it's getting guys to lower their hands, which opens up the striking. So he's hit, and he'll attack the body with his hands too, but those teeps are so important. They help him establish his range, and Conor's one of the best. Conor has one of the best understanding of range in the UFC, in my opinion. It's like nobody else. He just is a master at hitting you and being in places where you can't hit him back. Or when you are hitting him back, he's rolling with the punches. Like, Conor gets hit sometimes. It's not like he's not susceptible to getting hit, but he's able to be more effective with the striking than you are just because he understands the range better. And a big part of him establishing his range is his front kick. And I mean, you'll see it might pay attention to it in this fight because it might seem subtle and it might not seem like a big deal and it might just seem like he's throwing it out there. But the more that he does it, the more that guys have to worry about it and those hands start dropping. And that's when he starts coming over the top with punches and it confuses people, man. And another thing that Conor is an expert, and I hate to be like riding Conor. I'm aware that I'm riding Conor right now, right? But his striking is just so impressive. He's also great with the footwork. And he's always leading the dance. And he's a southpaw, right? And he's always going to be forcing Cowboy to move towards his left hand. His footwork and his kicks and just like the way he throws combos and the way he's like establishing range. He's a master at putting it all together, right? Now, Cowboy in the wrestling department. Cowboy's even said himself in interviews, it would probably be a smart idea for me to take this man down. And it would, but I still think Conor has really good jiu-jitsu. I think it's slept on a little bit because he never has to utilize it. You saw him defend relatively well against Khabib in the first round on the takedown. I mean, as the fight wore on, he got fucking mauled, right? And he couldn't stop it. But doing some things right in the beginning of that first round against Khabib, controlling the head, pushing it down. Conor has good jiu-jitsu, man. It's just not enough to overcome whatever Khabib was doing. But it might be enough to stay alive against Cowboy if Cowboy gets a takedown. I think that a lot of people think that if Cowboy gets the fight to the ground, it's going to be absolute domination on his end, and I don't think so. I think Conor's going to be able to stay alive in those situations, and I think you might even see some interesting grappling take place. Some really interesting transitions and stuff. For me, more so than the wrestling, the key to Cowboy winning this fight, and it's hard, man. This is why it's so hard to pick Cowboy in this fight. And I'm a fan of both guys. But it's hard to pick Cowboy in this fight because Conor's not only good at being the aggressor and moving forward and marching you down and maintaining that space, but he's also such a great fucking counterfighter. So when Cowboy is going to want to move forward and throw combinations at him, Conor's going to be slipping like this way, that way, that, and then just finding openings and firing back. This fight, I think Conor McGregor is going to win this fight by knockout inside of 3 rounds. I'm not sure when. You might see him kind of come out. And also, I want to touch on this because I think it's important. My girlfriend, my fiance and I were just talking about this last night. When Conor fought Khabib, it seemed like he was on cocaine. like he was partying and stuff, right? Like he would go out and he would go to the press conferences and come in all wild and screaming. And I was like, that's not Conor. Conor shit talking has always been so like taking little jabs at you and things just rolling off the tongue for him, right? Conor seems much more zen this fight, much more calmed down, much more in control of his emotions. Maybe not as insecure, maybe a little insecure going into that Khabib fight. He seems much more like himself, much more confident, actual confidence. It's like radiating off him a little bit. And I think Conor's dangerous when that shit's happening. Right? Like, and here's the difference. You got the feeling that when he was shit talking against Khabib, that he was trying to compensate for something. When he was shit talking against Aldo, you could tell it was because he had a leg up on Aldo in terms of the mental warfare. Khabib wasn't flustered by any of it, and Conor was trying to like overcompensate. And I just think his mentality was wrong. Not that he would have won the fight anyway, but his mentality was wrong going into that fight. I like where Conor's headspace is at. And I think the key to Cowboy winning this fight is going to be trying to get combinations in Conor's face and never letting him really get off on anything. But again, the problem is that Conor's just not good when he's the aggressor. He's a very good counter fighter. It's really hard for me to pick Cowboy in this fight. He could catch him with something. Cerrone also is going to have to be mixing things up, going to the body, attacking the legs to limit the movement of Conor. Maybe attacking the legs before Conor can start throwing some of those teeps. I like Conor in this fight, man. Like I said, inside three rounds. It's just, I think his striking is so world-class that it's going to be a lot for Cowboy. I don't think there are a lot of departments, like a lot of areas on the feet, whether Cowboy's moving forward or moving backwards, where he's going to have an advantage. I just think Conor's too gifted on the feet, and I think he's going to be able to find those openings. But very good fight. It's not going to be like if Cowboy takes Conor down, he's going to have to hold him down and dominate him. He just has to be level-changing to make Conor aware that the threat is there. That's how he's going to win this fight. You have to make Conor guess. Is the takedown coming? Because if Conor only has to worry about striking, he's going to win. Like I said, he's great at countering. But if he has to worry about a level change as well as the striking, might be a little bit more complicated for him. So I just think that Cerrone is going to have to fight a well-rounded MMA fight. And I think it's going to be tough to do, though, man. I think Conor is... I'd be betting a lot of money on Conor going into this fight. Watch him fucking lose now that I said that. But all right, I think I've done enough rambling. Thank you guys for tuning in. I really appreciate it. If you like what you heard, hit the subscribe button. Leave a comment, drop a like. Let me know what you guys think the outcome of the fights is going to be this weekend. And we'll roll one of these out to discuss the results and everything afterwards. You can find this also on iTunes, the Google Play Store. I need to get it put out on Spotify. But yeah, I think that's it. Thank you guys for tuning in, and I will catch you guys after the fight this weekend. Bye-bye.